Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Joyful, joyful.
You're in the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9 with the
Priest,
the Pom,
and the Poof.
This is the show where we talk about spirituality and sexuality for our community.
Good evening and welcome to Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9, and you're with the Priest, the Poof, and the Protagonist. Welcome.
Yeah, the Protagonist. I think I should speak with an English accent sometimes.
Oh, no.
Just fill in properly.
No.
No? You don't think no. That's a good idea? No, you've obviously heard my English accent. How are we all?
We heard you singing last week. If it's anything like that, please.
Oh, no, it's better. Believe me, it's better.
Oh. Yeah. I'm fabulous. How are you, Andrew?
Yes, yes. Excellent. Quietly beavering away here behind the desk, you know, slaving over a hot keyboard and such.
Oh, I know.
Look, he's such a good panellist, isn't he?
Oh, he's fabulous. And he just works those little fingers to the bone every week for us.
I know. He's wonderful. Anyway, last week we were going to talk to Carl Hand. But we're not sure what happened to him. In fact, we do know, but we'll let him tell you that because we do believe that we're going to be able to talk to him tonight. Our rumour was that he's been arrested.
Oh, fabulous.
So when I told him, well, we talked about that he was an activist, so I thought maybe he could have been arrested for protesting or something.
Mm.
So I told him he had until this week to think up what he was arrested for.
Well, it was a lot more exciting than the real reason that he couldn't come on air.
I know. Never mind. We will talk to him about that and get him to explain. Please explain.
Please explain on that one. Thanks, Carl.
Yeah. So we've got some great music coming up. We've got some news and we're going to talk about Ramadan because Ramadan starts on Friday.
Oh, really?
Yes.
It's interesting, Ramadan, isn't it? Because it's not at the same time every year. It moves forward a month or something, does it? Yeah.
It moves forward. And it must be difficult because they don't. They're not allowed to drink or eat.
Mm.
So I was talking to someone about this because they're actually married to someone who's Muslim. And they said during summer, it's very difficult for those who work outside in the heat and stuff when there's no, you know, they're not allowed to drink. So it's quite a...
But it's interesting because I've recently just moved from Brunswick and there's quite a large Muslim population in Brunswick and Coburg. And it's interesting when it is Ramadan because when the sun goes down, especially in summer when Ramadan falls at the end of the year, but there's a fabulous cake shop on Sydney Road, and during Ramadan, from the time the sun is about to set, you cannot get a seat, you cannot buy a cake because they are all in there buying and they're really, really happy because, you know, at last they can eat. But it's a very social time as well because they go to each other's houses, you know, and eat and share the cakes and things like that. And then at the last day of Ramadan, I believe that there is a special celebration as well where everybody gets together and I think they pass gifts around. And it's sort of like a Christmas almost.
Yeah, and they sort of block off streets and they have the worship because a lot of people, like Christians, only go to the mosque on Ramadan. Like Christians go on Easter. So anyway, we'll talk about that. And we got some news from South Africa, from America and from Australia. Catch up with a little bit of news.
Been around the world, Joy.
Oh, we are. Now, this first track is a dedication to the memory of my mum, who would have been 81 if she had have lived today. So I want to play this track in memory of her, Yvonne. And this is a track by Horse Could Stars.
Joy 94.9.
And you're on Spirit Lounge with Joy, with Andrew and with Lindsay. And tonight we have with us a guy who's young. Mm. He's gay. Mm. He's an activist. Mm. And he also happens to be a Christian minister.
I'm in love already.
Welcome, Carl, to Spirit Lounge.
Thanks, Joanne. Glad to be here.
Now, Carl's actually also the pastor, senior pastor at Crave MCC, and we'll talk about that a bit later on. So he's actually a colleague of mine. Uh-huh. Carl, first up, we told people last week that you had been arrested for, we're not sure what. So
activist activity.
Yes, we thought that that was a good reason why we couldn't get hold of you. Now tell the truth, Carl. Why couldn't we find you last week?
The truth? Oh, man, you're just
Come on.
So I was absolutely mortified when I realised what had happened, that my phone had been off. And I had not looked at the time, and I am so embarrassed because I was looking forward to talking, and it wasn't that I didn't think that it was important, but it was just one of those crazy things that happened.
But you also were trying to finish your thesis, weren't you?
A bit like that. I'm teaching a course, and I had to get the curriculum up online, and it wasn't working, and I was frustrated and focused on that. So that is actually part of that's the story.
Anyway, we're glad to have you with us tonight.
And it's not as good as being arrested.
No.
Look, I was really happy when I heard that was the story, and I want to hear more about my arrest. I've always wanted to be arrested.
Yeah, but we thought you would provide the details. We just said you're arrested for being an activist.
I was just going to make something up, and then you said tell the truth.
Yeah. Now, Carl, you were brought up as a Pentecostal. How was it for you when you came out at the age of 21?
Oh, yikes. Okay. So that's a pretty intense story. Coming out at 21 was not easy. I grew up in the old school of the Pentecostal church, which is before there was a Hillsong. The Assemblies of God was quite conservative socially, and you know, you could probably spot a Pentecostal person in Australia back in the early 80s by conservative dress and all sorts of stuff. And so it didn't go down well. And my dad and mum were pastoring a church in, I won't name them, but they were pastoring in a Pentecostal church. And yeah, it was pretty hard because it was a scandal for them at the same time as I was going through a lot of painful stuff. And they had really never, ever thought that they would hear that from their own son, because they didn't have a realistic picture of what it would look like. They had some pretty extreme ideas about what gay people were like, so they thought that they were hearing something really, really crazy from me. And yeah, it was hard.
Yeah, and I mean, that was obviously very, very difficult. Your spiritual journey since then, Carl, and in the last 10 years, how's that been?
Well, it's had lots of crazy ups and downs. You know, I think for the first few years after I came out, it was funny. I think that my spiritual journey was probably characterized by a lot of anger towards God, which a lot of people experience anger towards God. But if anything, that made me more determined to follow my spiritual calling, and that anger became a bit of a driving force for me.
Was it anger about being gay, Carl, or?
I think, yeah, anger about being gay, about feeling like God had not really been as clear as I wanted, that I grew up in a world where what God wanted was really clear. God set down really simple guidelines and everyone followed them. And that's what I expected.
Yeah. And he works in strange ways.
Yeah. It's true. Yeah, well, what was happening wasn't according to the textbook, and I kind of felt like God should have made it clearer to me what I should have done and how I should be living. And I was also really angry at the church for rejecting me, and for a long time, you know, I think, it's still a process of reconciliation between a lot of gay people in the church, and that's something that's there as well. So that was a big part at the beginning. I think that, though, towards the end of my 20s, I'm now almost 32, I think for the last 4 or 5 years, especially with the church that I've been a part of, which is Crave, which I mentioned before, there's been a lot of rediscovering of the joy that comes from having a relationship with God. And for me, that's just been something that said it was all worthwhile. So, yeah.
So was there ever was there a moment that you can pinpoint that was kind of like a turning point between you going, oh, I don't really like the church that's rejecting me, and rediscovering the joy? Is there a moment that you could pinpoint?
Yeah, there are probably a few turning points. Like, it was a bit of a complex journey, but I actually remember when I went to the States to study. Part of studying to be an MCC pastor at that time was an intensive period over in the States where MCC is more popular and there are more churches there. And I spent some time over there and made some really, really close friends who were also going through similar journeys to me. They were also training to be clergy, and lots of them had the same experiences as me. And I had this experience of realizing that the stuff I'd been going through, I often felt like I was the only person in the world. And all of a sudden I had these people around me, and it just clicked in me that MCC was home at that point. So since then, I think there's been more of a process of healing.
So how did you discover, and when did you discover you were called to ministry with Metropolitan Community Churches?
It's probably at that moment, which is really funny because, you know, I was already all the way over in the States doing exploring it. I had known that I was called to ministry for a long time. I think when I was a teenager, I sometimes stood back from following that because I had that unreconciled stuff about my sexuality still going on. But then when I started exploring MCC, and when I still had a lot of all those different issues going on emotionally, I was never quite sure if it was going to be the right place for me. And I think even by the time that I got over to the States and was doing the intensive and had done all the studies and everything, I still wasn't fully convinced. I didn't really know. I do remember that moment of being with those people and spending a lot of time crying with them and just releasing a lot of the issues that had happened. That was the moment that I kind of knew MCC is part of who I am. It's where I'm called to be.
It was a wonderful epiphany then, Carl.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yep. Now, what led you to your decision to start Crave at MCC?
Well, a lot of different complex things. MCC in Australia has a particular flavour to it, and it kind of follows a liturgical, that's probably a jargon word, it follows a very formal service structure, or often has, throughout its history, and coming out of a Pentecostal church, which is very much the opposite, where there's no formality whatsoever, and you're kind of, the service is just something that's led by the Spirit. It was like walking into another planet for me, and that was something that was really difficult for me. But one of the things that I experienced while I was training in MCC in Australia was people who were coming, especially out of Hillsong, or coming out of Anglican churches, which here in Sydney are very low church, they couldn't relate to it. And I would meet a lot of people who would just come to church and say, it's wonderful that there's this affirming environment here, but it's not right for me. And so I think out of meeting a lot of people like that, I kind of came to a conclusion eventually that there had to be something around that would reach out to people who were coming from that place. And so Crave is really a church that is an inclusive and affirming environment, but it's also a church which probably sits somewhere in the spectrum of charismatic and evangelical Christianity, as opposed to more formal and maybe liturgical Christianity.
And we're going to be back with Carl in a minute.
Okay.
Listen to Joy when you want, where you want, with the Joy app. Download it for free at joy.org.au.
You're on Joy 94.9 in the Spirit Lounge, and we're speaking with the Reverend Carl Hand. I trust that you're enjoying your appearance on the Spirit Lounge, Carl.
Absolutely.
Now, what part are you playing in the fight for marriage equality?
Well, I'm part of an organisation called Community Action Against Homophobia, which is the group since 2004 has been organising rallies and different activist events basically around the issue of marriage equality, broader than that, but focusing specifically on that. And we do at the moment a quarterly rally here in Sydney that usually gets quite a few thousand of people along to it. And they're really, really uplifting, really incredible events. And I think that over the years, we've been doing them for 8 years now, a lot of changes happened through those rallies, and a lot of people have kind of come along and been won over to the cause by them. So that's been a really exciting and positive experience.
How would you respond, Carl, to the claims that allowing gays to marry is actually going to destroy the institution of marriage? Seems like a strange statement, doesn't it?
Yeah,
really?
We're just waiting for the earth to open up and fire and brimstone and everybody to fall in whether they're gay or not.
You get a bit stunned when you hear something like that, because I think that if someone's going to make a claim like that, it's their responsibility to say why they think that. Like, what is going to destroy the institution of marriage about gay people getting married? Some of the arguments that have come out recently have been, well, you know, a lot of things...
Oh, I'm not really sure what happened there. We've been speaking with Carl Hand from Crave MCC. Let's go to a track now. This one's from Michael W. Smith. It's called Awesome God.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
And you're on Spirit Lounge with the priest, the protagonist and the poof. And we're talking to Reverend Carl Hand, who is from Crave MCC. Carl, we were talking about gay marriage and the fact that people are claiming that it will destroy the institution of marriage. And you were starting to tell us about the latest crazy statements people are making.
Well, I think that the things that endanger marriage in our society, I mean, some people in Parliament were saying, really, we need to look at ourselves, because it's actually things like marital unfaithfulness among heterosexual people that's causing problems in marriage. But in my experience, the stuff that wears on people and brings them down are things in our society that need addressing, everything from poverty, from mental health issues, which don't get treated well in our society, things like lack of education, things like all sorts of social problems. And I actually think it's a bit of a distraction when our government really needs to be providing for people in much better ways than it is. And what they do is they say, oh, families are being torn apart by gay people. Well, I think that there are some other places that we could look if we wanted to find ways to make marriages stronger in our country. I think a really good thing to do would be to start looking at issues of poverty and homelessness, because that's something that destroys families all the time.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, at the end of the day, I think we all know that, you know, a family is about love more than anything else. It doesn't matter if there's two dads, you know, two mums, or, you know, three-day-old chickens. You know, the thing is, it's about love and how the child is brought up. It's the argument's becoming really silly. But anyway, Carl, you've presided over mass weddings as a part of marriage equality protests. Now, some people feel that this mass weddings, they demean marriage and show that the GLBTI community do not take marriage seriously. Now, how would you respond to that?
Well, I think you need to understand the nature of a political stunt. Sometimes you do something that is done in order to draw attention to something. And, I mean, it falls in the tradition of civil disobedience about just doing things that are illegal but shouldn't be illegal in order to draw attention to the fact that the law is really, really stupid in the first place. I think that ideally we would like to promote weddings that are very well thought out and you know, that come out of a more kind of sacred and spiritual space. But I think that most people understand that in the context of a rally, when you get people to act out a wedding. And what we've often done in our rallies is had people act out a wedding that is on behalf of all the people who aren't able to get married. It's actually meant to be a symbol, and it's meant to be something that encourages people, and the crowds love it. You know, I don't often hear feedback from people that says it's demeaning, but I often hear feedback from people who said it's really encouraging and uplifting. So I think that the majority of people actually get the purpose of what we do those weddings for.
Hmm. Now, Carl, you're also involved in the outreach Wear It Purple. Tell us a bit about what that's on about.
Wear It Purple is actually a group of young people who are associated with our church. We're really concerned about the issue of bullying in schools. So they came up with a really simple idea of students wearing purple one day a year, just in solidarity with other gay young people in their schools. And, I mean, what an encouraging thing it would be if you're in the closet, or even if you haven't come out to anyone in your school or anything like that, or you experience bullying sometimes. And people make a statement like that, especially when you're a teenager, it would mean everything. But the idea, it just took off. And people have referred to it, from Lady Gaga to Madonna to Oprah to President Obama to the Wear It Purple campaign. It's just how popular it became. So there are some people in our church who are currently doing a lot of kind of behind-the-scenes work in making that happen, organizing the Wear It Purple Day every year, organizing the Wear It Purple Mardi Gras March, and organizing actually education in schools around the issues of GLBTI bullying. That's been really successful and a great thing.
So recently you went to St. Andrew's Cathedral. Why did you go, and what did you learn from attending the service?
That was a really interesting event. It came out on the news that, and I mean, this is bizarre, but the archbishops of Sydney, including the Catholic, Anglican and the Orthodox, got together to release a joint public statement. And in all of their churches on the same Sunday, a letter was going to be read out. And it was about the issue of same-sex marriage, or as they would say, redefining marriage was the language that they were using in those letters. And I mean, I thought, for starters, it's really bizarre that this is the issue that they choose to speak out against. Some of the things that happen in our world and our society they could be talking about, but this is the thing that brings them together. And I just went along to see it. For me, it was a little bit of an exercise in learning to face up to things instead of just hearing about them in the news and being a little bit, you know, depressed about it, actually going and seeing what it was about. But it was a really, really interesting thing, seeing how it was done. And the thing that stuck out more than anything about it to me was just how top down everything is, that there was absolutely no discussion, no opportunity for another voice. And I bet there were people who were in that congregation, because there was a good 150 people there, who would have had a different view or maybe would have had some questions. But what they actually did was, the bishop did not even come to his own cathedral. He actually got somebody else to read it out, and then they played a clip on a screen of him talking about same-sex marriage. And it just really surprises me how churches keep on dealing with issues like this from a great height, and they don't talk to people in their congregations. I'm pretty worried just about the way that it's kind of splitting churches from top to bottom. That the leadership is on one page, and the people who go along to churches, according to statistics, are on a completely different page.
So why do you think that this spearheaded leadership tactic is employed, if you think that it's going to destroy the churches? Are there any advantages to using leadership this way?
Well, I think it's one of those things where the churches that were doing it in particular were all churches with a very hierarchical structure. So there was not really a statement. I mean, I know that some people in the Baptist Union had put together a similar statement, but in Baptist churches, you can't get away with that. It's a very grassroots way of organizing the churches. But these churches, I think people are a little bit used to having their leadership disagreeing with them, and especially in Roman Catholic churches, for instance. We know that the vast majority of Roman Catholic people just ignore the Catholic Church's teaching on contraception, and they don't talk about it, and they shrug it off. So I think that sometimes it's used to maintain, I don't know, a kind of a veneer of a church having a certain stance on an issue. And people who are involved in churches where that hierarchical way of governing the church often kind of, they go along with it, but they kind of have another secret personal view. I think it's really unhealthy myself, but I think it's the best they're going to be able to get at the moment, because I don't think that the people who come along and sit in these churches would all sign up for all of the positions that the leadership really would like to.
And what about within your own church, within MCC and Crave in particular? How is the structure different? Is it what sort of consultative structures do you have in place to ensure that the congregation's view is the view of the leadership?
Well, MCC churches are congregational churches. So all of the decisions that are made in MCC churches are ultimately belong to the congregations. So it's really a matter of leadership from the ground up. And that's, for me, that's a process which can sometimes be a little bit more time-consuming than just, you know, writing an official position. But it's something that actually means that when you want change to happen in your church or when you want leadership to go in a specific direction, you actually have to bring everything along with you. And in the long run, it's a really empowering process to go through.
We're talking with Reverend Carl Hand from Crave MCC, and we're going to be back with him again after this track from Soul Frame called Beautiful.
SMS 0427 JOY 949. Our line is open for your feedback.
And you're on Spirit Lounge with Andrew, Joy and Lindsay. And thank you to Caroline and Trish for your message about the Horse Song Stars. Now, we're talking to Reverend Carl Hand from Crave MCC. Carl, what is your vision for Crave MCC and for your ministry?
That's a really big question. I think that, for me, the last 4 years with Crave has been a learning process, finding out who this community is and what they're actually all about. I actually feel like I'm at a time now where I'm really, really open and learning a lot very quickly about what Crave MCC is meant to look like. But I guess I have an image of a community of people who are in a healthy relationship with God and are actually able to bring about change in their world. That happens in a way that's really driven by the Spirit. And to me, that's the guiding image behind everything that I do. And I just want to learn more at the moment about how Crave can be that group of people. I want us to be, one thing that I'm really working on at the moment is the idea of Crave in a place that looks a lot like home. I think that we live in a society where people, you know, they flitter between a lot of different things very quickly. And it's very difficult for people to think about things like commitment, but I just think that the church could be such an incredible force for reconciliation in the world. If we were able to build a community that were really committed to that, and that's my vision, that's where my heart is at the moment with Crave.
One of the things I really admire about Crave is that it's not another social club. It's not a place where people just go to feel good about themselves and about their spirituality, but it's a place where they go to be empowered to go out and outreach into the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, the very nature of what we do means that a lot of broken people come along, and that, you know, I'm the best example. I was completely broken when I first came into MCC. And for a long time, MCC has been a lot about doing the healing work, and a lot of what we've done has been very gentle. But I think that we're coming to a time in the world now where we can be more than just people who are concerned about our own healing, that we can actually do some really transformational work, not only transforming ourselves, but transforming the communities that we live in. And looking at some of the injustices that we have in the world, but believing at the same time that there is a God who has a vision for a world that is reconciled, a world that is just, a world that runs by compassion, that we could be a model of that. That's something that, to me, I think is the next big step for Crave and for MCC as a whole.
And often our healing comes partly through reaching out to others also.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And in many ways, Carl, you know, I've just been listening to what you've been saying, and really that is what religion, the basis of religion is being accepting, no matter what religion it is, being accepting and helping people through the hard times. And I have to admit that, you know, being, you know, sort of a lapsed Catholic or a totally fallen one, is that churches, they've lost it. They've lost contact with people.
Yeah, I find it really, really hard to read the news about the church these days because it's so different from what my vision of what the church should be is all about. But at the same time, every time I read stuff like that, my own vision about doing something that's better, or well, not doing it myself, being involved in something that's better, you know, that becomes really, really more passionate within me, because I think that we can, you know, we have an opportunity to be something that's incredible.
Now, one of the things you've done this year was to have a conference in January called Passion Is.
Yeah.
And tell us a bit about that and how it came about, and also what you're planning for the next conference in January next year.
Yeah, one thing that Crave is involved in doing, and we put a lot of energy into, is doing an annual conference, which is about bringing together all sorts of different people around Australia. And just giving people a sense there's something bigger than themselves out there, because I know there are a lot of affirming congregations, but they struggle a lot by themselves because they're quite rare. And we have people who are involved in Crave who come from all over the place, so it's great to have people come together. Passion Is was such an uplifting time for me. We had a guest speaker called Jay Baker come out from the States, and Jay is this person who's doing so much work in, he's a straight man himself, but he talks to people a lot on behalf of the gay and lesbian community and runs a church that's very, very open to questioning and stuff like that. And he was an incredible speaker to have. And we just found it so uplifting and inspiring for us all to be together in that intense format. This year, we are running on the theme of the walk home, which is really getting people to concentrate on their life journey and where their life is going and what are the things that are driving that journey. And one of the speakers that we have actually a few speakers who are really have blown me away with stuff they've done this year. One of them is Matt Glover, who I think has been on your show recently. And Matt
several times.
Yeah, he has.
Yeah.
If you want anything, Matt's the man.
Yeah, Matt is incredible. I had the extreme privilege of meeting Matt recently, and he went out on a limb and he said that he supported the gay and lesbian community, and he got fired and he got badly treated and he was battered and bruised. And the reason that it inspired me so much is because for me, that kind of just happened to me because of who I was. But here was a person who was actually deciding to identify with me, to come and stand with me. And he didn't have to. He could have just ignored the issue and continued on and been really happy by himself. But he actually chose to do that. And to me, that's a picture of what Jesus does for us, the way that Jesus comes and stands with us in our brokenness. So I was just so inspired by that. And he is going to be speaking at our conference about the prodigal son coming home to the father, and the way that we come home and receive God's love and that we're welcomed by God. We have Roland Croucher, who's a guy who used to be the pastor of one of the first really big churches in Australia, which is Central Baptist, and who's been a consultant for World Vision and done all sorts of things. And he's an incredible guy. And he's going to be talking about his own journey and the transformations that have happened in his life. And the other person that is speaking is Jared McKenna, who's an activist and a guy who lives there in Perth, who's involved in nonviolence training. He also works for World Vision and has this incredible heart for refugees, and at the moment is working to accommodate. He's actually quite sacrificially looking at ways to open his own home up to people who are refugee families and allow them to come and live there. And I just spent some time at the community he lives in, and it blew me away. So I'm so excited about January, and I can't wait to hear from all these people and just think about the concept of where is my life going and what is the meaning behind it all. Yeah.
With the conference, do I need to be part of the MCC organization already to be able to attend, or can I just come along?
No, everyone can come along. We have all sorts of people come along. Some people have registered for our conference and then come along. We had no idea who they were, where they were from. They just signed up, and we built some really great relationships that way. And we'd love everyone to come along and be part of it. And there's a contingent of people coming from Melbourne, and some people coming from New Zealand, and a group of people coming from Perth. So it's a national thing, and we were hoping to get as many people involved as we can.
So you'd even let Andrew come?
I'll get back to you on that one.
What about me?
You should all come. You guys should do your radio show from Sydney that week.
There's an invitation if ever I heard one. We're very tempted.
See if we can get them to pay for the airfare. Now, finally, Carl, how can people find out more about Crave MCC and about the conference?
Well, it's all on our website, which is just cravemcc.com. So it's really easy to find. The conference itself is thewalkhome.info. That's just all one word, thewalkhome, and then .info is where you can actually go to the conference's own website. And there's a bit of information up there at the moment, and you can register that way. And so if you just register, then we'll be in touch, and we'll let you know all the info that you need to know. Or you can just look at our website, where there'll be constant updates happening about it. I wish I could say we had a Facebook group for the conference. That's about a week off, but I'll let you know as soon as that's up.
We'll put links to everything through the Spirit Lounge.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Reverend Carl Hand, thank you very much for coming on the Spirit Lounge.
Thank you for having me.
We have the fresh sound you're looking for. Joy 94.9.
You're on Spirit Lounge, and, well, that was an absolutely fascinating interview, wasn't it?
Remarkable man, and very brave too. I'm amazed that you know, we've spoken to Matt Glover since I've been here, and a few other people. And being gay in the church, in any church, is hard, no matter what. And I just admire these people, because in many ways they're trailblazers, and they really are paving paths for us. So that, you know, if, like, I'm not really sort of, probably never step foot in another church, who's to say? But, you know, I appreciate the work that they're doing. I think everybody out there, no matter if they are religious or not religious, can see the value in their work, and just trying to change people's attitudes, which is so important.
When you're a gay Christian, you have to come out twice almost. You come out as, you know, I came out, yes, I'm a lesbian. But then when you come out and say to people, I'm a Christian, they look at you as though you're nuts.
Mm.
You know, and I understand that, because so many people have been so hurt by the churches. But for many of us, it is really part of who we are.
And there's so many people too, and I have to admit, I have had the same attitude, is that why would you support an organisation that's been persecuting us for the last 2012 years? You know, I had that opinion for quite some time, until I actually went to church, I think it was MCC when it was in Fitzroy.
Oh, yes.
And the thing that struck me was, it was not about the church, it was not about anything else, but it was about people basically having faith. And that was the big sort of turning point for me with it all. Was it was about people having faith, and it was about people having an incredible belief, and coming together to celebrate that. Then there was a fabulous party afterwards on the lawns.
See, I reckon that if we allow the churches to take away our faith, we're letting them win.
Mm.
You know, and it's about standing up to the churches and saying, we have the right to have a faith. I have the right to be a Christian, and you can't take that away from me. So it's like with gay marriage. We have a right to marry, and we'll fight for it. Well, I'll fight for my right to be a Christian as well as a lesbian.
Well, see, the church and politicians have put us into a position where our love for each other is politicised, and there's no other demographic on the planet that has to deal with that. And you, Joy, and Carl, and Matt, you know, all these people that are doing that, I just think it's fantastic work, because eventually it has to change, it has to turn. And it's those people like we've been seeing recently that, oh my God, if you allow gay marriage, you know, babies are going to be born with three heads from now on, and God's going to be throwing down spears of fire, and da 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 da. I mean, that has never ever happened, you know.
You wonder why these people don't look at the countries where there is gay marriage and work out what's happening in them. Well, but they sometimes are not that. Well, they're not that open.
Mm.
To looking at any other point of view.
Yeah, well, and Spain, I think, and
that's a problem.
Mm.
And I think many churches are still not open to looking at the fact that as gay people, we have the right to be loved by God, and we are loved by God. Yeah. They you know, have this narrow view, and they turn up these few scriptures that if they actually bothered to study them would find out the true meaning, but they ignore all these other ones that they don't like too. But it's just
God doesn't
so hypocritical in many ways.
And I think I might have said it last week, you know, I cannot get it through my head that, you know, God would forgive somebody like Charlie Manson, who's been a mass murderer, but not forgive us because we basically love people of the same sex. And that's what Jesus preached.
Well, I don't think we need to be forgiven for it.
No,
we're not doing anything that's wrong.
Oh, I don't know. I've been a bit naughty in my day.
Oh, but that's fun. I think God's got a great sense of humour and enjoys a bit of naughty.
You know, I think God's up there, you know, looking down on us, just shaking his head, saying, oh, my God, what have I done?
You know, what have I done? That's another conversation we'll have to have.
She's up there saying, what have I done? Look at that, what have I done?
Anyway, that's all from us. We didn't get to talk about our news or anything else, but that was a fantastic interview with Reverend Carl Hand. And it's goodbye from the priest.
It's goodbye from the protagonist.
And goodbye from the poof. We'll see you again next week.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.